listening, Cruelty Nation. It's your host, Abhi Golhar. Welcome to another wonderful podcast. I'm excited because today we're talking about lending, and we're also talking about how you can use a bridge lender instead of a bank. Now, many of you that are just jumping into the real estate space, you're thinking, well, how do I use the appropriate amount of leverage? Whether you're in California, whether you're on the West Coast or East Coast, let's actually be frank, the West Coast is better because of the sunsets, the temperature, the food, and just like the opportunities. I think the West Coast, California, is fantastic. I might be biased in saying that, only because our guest is from California and he's with Rodeo Lending. They're based out of Los Angeles, but I mean, I truly believe that Napa is really my favorite place in the whole wide world, and it should be yours too. Listen, if you're a real estate investor, this is your show right now today, because you'll learn how to leverage your capital in the right way, how to reposition real estate, what that means to your benefit, and you'll hear that directly from a lender. This podcast is brought to you by Think Multifamily. Whether you're a passive investor or an aspiring syndicator, ready to learn how to grow big and fast, Think Multifamily is the industry's leading acquisition and education company. They're here to help you invest for your family's future every step of the way. Check them out. Go to www.thinkmultifamily.com. Richard Katz from Rodeo Lending, welcome to the show. How are you doing, man? You ready to rock and roll with me?
I am.
Cool.
How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing great. Give me a little background. Who are you? What do you do?
Sure. So I'm the president of Rodeo Lending. In Texas, it's Rodeo.
hey, I suppose I'm like a true Texan, right? I'm just like, woo, Rodeo!
Yeah. So
Rodeo.
We're a bridge lender. We do both residential and commercial real estate. We'll lend up to $18 million and as little as $100,000. Our typical loan is 12 to 36 months with an average of 14 months. And we go up to 75% of the after repair value of the property.
Got it. Nice. So you're not super aggressive on the LTVs, which is good. What has been your general thought on investors in California? Is it they're taking too much risk right now? Are they not taking enough risk? Where are the hot spots of opportunity? And I know SoCal is different than NorCal, right? Like,
right.
Completely different world.
We're a nationwide lender.
Yeah.
So, but in California, for whatever reason, there's a ton of companies like myself where they're doing bridge lending. And I think it varies. There are some companies here that are extremely conservative, and others do things that are, you know, a mystery to me. They'll go up to 100% of the purchase price. They'll go up to 90-95% of ARV, which you know, I think is a recipe for disaster, really. And that's, you know, worrisome when you're getting to a bubble, when you're seeing companies doing this sort of thing.
So why would a bridge lender go up to 95% or 100%?
I think they're desperate to get out capital. They're, you know, they have some capital and they need to get it out, and they're willing to take risks that are undue. I mean, and also since the real estate market has been going up on a pretty fast trajectory, they think it's never going to end. And I'm here to tell you that it will eventually. I've been through several cycles, and you know, what goes up must come down eventually.
It's a song that never ends. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, no, fair enough. Where do you think the market's going to be in the next year or two? Is that are you thinking here? Are you thinking here? Are you thinking here?
You know, that's a really tough question. There's a lot of headwinds, but there's also a lot of good things going on in the marketplace. You know, the obvious COVID overlay of what's been going on is always worrisome, whether it's going to get worse, whether there's going to be a new variant. There's also a lot of things going on in China right now that are worrisome, with that, you know, big real estate company that has pretty much failed, and not paying their debt. They're also, if you read the headlines yesterday, for whatever reason, China is having some serious issues with power. A lot of their factories have to be closed, including, I read, the Apple factory in China has been closed. So, you know, those sort of things you hear about and you get a little bit worried for the overall economy. But then, you know, on the good side, you look what's happening in the housing market here in the United States, and it's very, very positive. People are moving. They want properties. There's a housing shortage. So there's a lot of construction activity. And, you know, all that's very, very positive. Also, you know, as people come out of their in-house shelter and start participating in the economy again, you know, we're seeing some real boom in the economy. So I think it's kind of balanced. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, you don't know if there's going to be a black swan or something like that. And, you know, we're positive in our outlook, but always, you know, I think it's part of my job to be paranoid.
So if there's one thing you could be paranoid about and one thing that you would suspect could be a black swan, what would it be?
Right. I think inflation is a big thing. You know, you're reading a lot about inflation right now. Oil prices are at a very high price right now. A lot of other things, I was reading bacon is at an all-time high to buy bacon. And, you know, so when you talk about real estate, affordability is the biggest thing. So when you have other kind of things on your budget that are going up in price, it affects affordability. So I think that's a headwind for real estate. I also am worried about what's going on in China right now, what I previously said. There are supply chain issues already, and I think that's going to get a bit worse. You know, we're having trouble in the economy filling jobs. There's not enough people working. You know, there's 90 ships backed up in the Long Beach Harbor, you know, waiting to get unloaded. And, you know, it's all basically a labor shortage there. They're trying to get 24-hour, you know, labor, but they can't. So it's an interesting dilemma.
Yeah, my world blows up when Amazon, like my Prime delivery, goes from 2 days to 5 days, which, Richard, is not acceptable. Okay, that is not, listen, I live in America, and I want Prime delivery to be less than 2 days, and at the most, 2 days. That's a problem for me. If my experience at like a Wendy's drive-thru takes an extra 5 minutes, Richard, that is not acceptable. No, I'm totally kidding.
I'm the guy beeping behind you to say, where the hell's my food?
Where is it? Well, I want my smoothie. Where's my milkshake? Okay, this body only drinks Wendy's milkshakes. And if I don't get delivered on time, inside of 5 minutes, we have issues. You know, I think all of this could be fixed with a solar power grid in the farmlands of China. But that's a different story for a different day. We were talking about, really, this should just become a political podcast at this point. We were talking about where people are moving regarding a tax climate, business climate. Can you talk to that and how and where you see the real estate opportunities as a result of that?
Sure. I think the states that you're seeing having really significant growth are business-friendly, low tax or no tax, state tax, that is, states like Florida, Texas. Arizona is growing like crazy. We just got licensed there in Arizona, and we're seeing tremendous growth there. Tennessee is experiencing tremendous growth, especially the Nashville area. Idaho, tremendous growth. Utah, housing prices in Utah we've seen go up significantly, and a tremendous amount of construction going on there. And these are all states that have either no tax or low tax. and people are migrating there. There is an understanding that, you know, with the new administration, they probably will raise federal taxes. So I think people want to be in a place where their taxes for the state are going to be low. They're going to be in a business-friendly environment so they can make as much money as possible. And I think those states are going to have significant growth. Now, I live in California. There are areas in California, despite our high taxes, that are seeing growth and opportunity. I don't rule out any states that have high taxes of having growth, but I think where the real growth is happening is these low tax, low regulation, kind of business friendly states.
So it's kind of an interesting question. You mentioned there are still opportunities in California. How can that be when everybody wants to move out of the state of California?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We are still a technology hub, and I live in Los Angeles. So Los Angeles, where the beach, they call it Silicon Beach, Santa Monica, Venice area. There's an attraction there for a lot of the technology companies are, at least if they're not moving their headquarters there, they're at least opening up many offices there. And we're seeing growth that way. So when technology comes in, it's really a big driver of growth. It also is a big driver of property values going up because, you know, a lot of these tech companies have big financial gains on the stock market and everything else. So people have the ability, once they kind of cash out of that, to buy some significant real estate, and you're seeing growth that way.
Got it. What do you think about the Midwest? So you got licensed in Arizona. I think Arizona is a great market. I love Phoenix. Scottsdale is fantastic. If you maybe even head west a little bit in some of these secondary markets.
It's the fastest growing state in the country. Right now, it's incredible what's going on there.
Yeah, the U-Haul index for Arizona. Arizona, I think, was number 21 or 22 last year, if I remember correctly, on where like people wanted to move. This year, they're number 5. It's nuts. Wow. It's like people just want to go to Arizona. I think it's great. Sure. Now, why people don't go to Michigan, I'm not entirely sure. It could be because of Detroit and just armpit of America still, maybe.
I think Detroit's still growing, though. You know, you had Quicken Loans there.
Yeah, and Gilbert did a good job.
A tremendous job of really spearheading the growth of that city. So, You know, Midwest, I think, is more steady and growing in certain areas. There's obviously a lot of pressure because of some of the manufacturing that has left those areas. But you're seeing, in Ohio and various locations in Ohio and Indiana and some of these, in Detroit, there's been growth. I think it's not as fast as some of the other states I mentioned, but there is growth in certain pockets of the Midwest.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, I'm a huge believer in the Midwest. I will invest in the Midwest any day that I can. Even though I'm from Michigan and I generally hate the state of Ohio, I'll take a look at Columbus. I'll take a look at Indianapolis. I'll take a look at Grand Rapids, Michigan, Gary, Indiana. What else? Maybe Pennsylvania. I don't know about, that's more like East-ish. Those are generally three cities that I'll look at. Cleveland, Ohio, probably not so much. Detroit, absolutely. Southfield, Michigan, absolutely. Novi, Michigan, absolutely. So these secondary, tertiary markets, I think, are glimmering with hope for investors, for opportunities. Where do you guys generally lend? Any particular states that you favor over other states? If I submit a deal as a borrower, you'll say, yeah, it's approved automatically because it's in the state of Arizona, but it's going to suck if it's in the state of Idaho because we're just going to get a bag of potatoes. Do you care which states? Or?
Well, we don't check any state where we'll say, oh, we'll definitely lend on any property there. But having said that, you know, we are in California, so we understand California really well. We do probably 40% of our lending in California, just because we're located here. But we really like Florida. We do a lot of lending in Florida. We like Texas. We like Arizona, as I said, and that's kind of new to us because you do need a license there to lend, and in our type of space, and we just recently received it. You know, we just closed a few loans in Idaho. Like Idaho, it's, you know, a lot of people are moving there. It's a really beautiful place to live. We did just closed a loan in Haley, Idaho on a beautiful house. You know, but we do lend in the Midwest. You mentioned Columbus, Ohio. We did I think it was like 15 homes in one deal in Columbus. And that, you know, the people who bought those homes did really well. The prices of those homes went up significantly. They did a great job on refurbishing them and making them more valuable.
Will you do anything, saying like Alabama, long-term rentals in Alabama, say $65,000 to $75,000? Do you guys have a minimum? Last question, then we got to go.
Our minimum is $100,000, but, okay. You know, we make exceptions if it's worthwhile with the client. If it's a repeat client, we'll make some exceptions.
What are your rates?
We do Alabama, yes.
Okay.
If it's really rural, probably not. But if it's in one of the cities or close to it, yeah.
Got it. What are your general rates on, say, like if I'm buying a single family rental in Birmingham, so it's a legit city, for say 15 year loan?
Well, we are short-term loans, so okay. We do usually 12 months to 36 months.
Okay.
Because we're usually a bridge to a bank loan, to be honest.
In that case.
We're doing fix and flip loans and on the commercial side, usually repositioning loans. But having said that, our rates are anywhere from 7.5% to 9.99%.
Okay.
And 1.5 to 2.5 points usually.
Got it. Great. This was awesome. Richard, thank you so much. I certainly appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely get in touch with Richard. Rodeo Lending, right? RodeoLending.com.
Like the street.
Like the street. We have a Rodeo Drive in Atlanta. It's kind of interesting. It's not the Rodeo Drive, but it's, you know, our copycat version of it. So it's kind of neat. But, you know, hey, if you're from Texas, go to the rodeo. That's fine too, as long as you give Richard some business,
exactly.
Right?
We're Rodeo, California, rodeo in Texas.
There
sure.
You go. I love it, okay. Richard. We'll be in touch for sure. Thanks so much. Appreciate the insights.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank
See you next time. Think Realty Nation. This next segment is brought to you by Ashcroft Capital. Ashcroft Capital is a national multifamily syndication firm founded by Joe and Frank. Good friends, Joe and Frank. Ashcroft Capital focuses on capital preservation while striving to return strong risk-adjusted cash-on-cash to investors. The firm specializes in value-add real estate in Texas, Georgia, and Florida. Check them out, ashcroftcapital.com/Travis, or you can also call 954-342-6154. Ladies and gentlemen, there are four steps to vetting any general contractor. There was an article written on the thinkrealty.com blog by Taylor Miller, who talks about these. I'll talk about two of them. Number one, capability and compliance. I think the number one, we talk about capability. In the state of Georgia, you need a license. You should have a license. There are a lot of folks that will kind of like indirectly work with a contractor and then say, yeah, we have a license through like these two people. No, you actually want a legit contractor with a legit license. Not in the state of Texas, you don't have to have a license, just as an example, to do renovations. So that's great. No need there. But I would highly, highly recommend that you scrub your contractor for experience. And then, of course, what Taylor talks about is capability. Capability. Do they have the ability to say and do what they say they're going to do? Super important. Do they have the suppliers? Do they have the materials? Do they have a labor? Do they have the labor? Do they have a shortage of labor? Do they have a surplus of labor? What's the reasoning behind that? Have they had previous experience, and do they have happy clients and customers? How often do they miss deadlines? How honest will they be with you when a project is going sideways? These are things that are really, really important for me, an investor, for you, somebody to know as well when it comes to working with your contractors. Don't just take them at face value. Ask them to prove what they're telling you. Number two, I would say subcontractor labor. This is number three in Taylor's article, but I'll talk about it as a number two. Quote, ideally, you'll want to find a GC who will be self-performing for most of the project themselves. It is common to have certain phases like construction, like electrical, plumbing, roofing done by subcontractors, allowing the GC to focus on other things like foundation or framing. It saves time, but also make sure that there are no cost, there are no corners being cut. And they're not extreme cost cutting measures as well, which will also lead to corners being cut by subcontractors. By definition, a subcontractor is not the GC himself or herself. So they're going to outsource some of that work. By doing so, outsourcing generally means, hey, I might want to cut costs and might want to cut some time. This is very prevalent in the technology space. You'll offshore to the Philippines, China, India, Eastern Europe to save on cost. Makes sense. But as long as you don't cut corners, that's the most important piece. So if you're looking at contractors, read this article titled Four Steps for Vetting a General Contractor and really pay attention to that GC's capability to actually do the work and also how many subcontractors that GC has. And just please make sure they're not cutting any corners. That being said, that's a wrap. Let's give a huge shout out to the sponsor for today's show, Think Multifamily. Whether you're a passive investor looking for passive income or an aspiring syndicator, you want to learn how to grow big and fast. Think Multifamily is the industry's leading acquisition and education company who's here to help you invest for your family's future every step of the way. Visit www.thinkmultifamily.com for more information. That's a wrap. It's been a fun show. Got any questions? Get in touch. Go to thinkrealty.com. You can find me anywhere online at Avi Golhar, so feel free to shoot me an email. All my contact information is online. And until next time, happy investing.